This is her third yellow card in 3 games. I can't get her to stop. Knox stuck his fingers in his mouth and whistled. Everyone looked in our direction, including Waylay.
Way, he said, crooking his finger. Get over here.
Chloe released her, and Waylay, gaze on her feet, cheeks red, marched over to the line. Knox released me and hooked Waylay by the back of the neck.
I get it, kid. I do. But you can't say that shit on the field or in school.
Why not? You say it. My mom says it.
We're adults, and we don't have a bunch of other adults breathing down our necks telling us what not to do.
So what am I supposed to do? I got tripped. I could have scored.
You say it as loud as you want to in your head. You let it come out of your eyes, your pores, every exhale. But you do not say it on the field again. You're fucking better than that way. You've got a temper. But there's a hell of a lot more power in controlling it than letting it fly. Use it, or it'll use you. You get me?
She nodded solemnly. I think so. When can I swear?
When you and me are watching football.
Waylay's gaze slid to my face, gauging my reaction.
Don't you worry about your aunt. She's proud as hell of you, but you're only holding yourself back when you blow up like that. So let's give her something else to be proud about, yeah?
She sighed, then nodded again. Yeah, okay. But I get to swear when we watch football?
Damn right you do,
Knox said, ruffling her hair. And when I'm not in school anymore?
You can swear as much as you fucking want after you're out of college. Maybe grad school, too, if you want a PhD or some shit.
The corner of her mouth lifted.
That's better, he said. Now, get your ass out there and put the ball in the back of the net so we can get ice cream after.
But it's morning, she said, again looking at me as if I were some anti-swearing, anti-ice cream monster.
No better time for ice cream than after a big win,
he assured her. She grinned up at him. Okay. Thanks, Knox. Sorry, Aunt Naomi. You're forgiven, I assured her. I'm already proud of you. Now go be awesome. So it wasn't my best advice to impart, but I was feeling rather swoon-like as Knox stood shoulder to shoulder with Wraith. My father, then Nash, joined him. Together they created a wall of testosterone, ready to protect and guide their girls. Just when you think he can't get any hotter, my mom said, sidling up next to me. Are you talking about Knox or Dad? I asked. Both. All of them, really. Coach Wraith certainly has a charm about him, and Nash is just as sexy as his brother. Mom, it's just an observation. We wit women have excellent taste in men. Well, most of us. I covered my mouth with my hand and tried to stifle the laugh. Time was ticking down, and the score was still tied 1-1.
Let's go, ladies,
Wraith shouted. I saw Waylay glance our way, caught the tiny smile on her face, and I felt the tingles again. She had a cheering section waiting to celebrate with her, and it meant something to her. You're doing an amazing job with her, Mom said. Really? Look at that smile. Look at how she keeps glancing over here, reassuring herself that we're all still here. Say what you will about Tina, but giving you her daughter was the best choice she's ever made. My eyes clouded with tears. Thanks, Mom, I whispered. She looped her arm through mine, then tensed. She has the ball again! Wraith's granddaughter had gotten tangled up with 2 defenders and sent the ball sailing to Waylay's feet. Go! We shouted as one, the crowd coming to its feet. Mom and I clung to each other as Waylay dribbled around the last defender between her and the goal. Oh my God, I'm going to be sick. Let her rip, Waylay! Mom shrieked. So she did. I held my breath as we watched the ball sail in slow motion toward the goal. The crowd was screaming, I could hear Steph over everyone yelling, "Get it in the net thing!" The goalie dove for it. But the ball spiraled just past her fingertips into the back of the net. I screamed along with Mom as we jumped up and down together. "That's my granddaughter!" Mom screeched.
"Fuck yeah!" Wraith bellowed.
"You're damn right!" Liza shouted. Sloan and Steph were hugging each other. The ref blew the final whistle.
"That's game."
Waylay stood stock still, staring at the ball in the back of the net as if she couldn't believe what she'd just done. And then she turned. Her teammates raced to her, shrieking and giggling. But she was looking beyond them. She was looking at me. And then she was running. And so was I. I caught her when she jumped into my arms and swung her around. "You did it! Did you see? Did you see what I did, Aunt Naomi?" "I saw, honey. I'm so proud of you. Can we get ice cream? And can I swear when I watch football with Knox?" "Yes, and I guess so." She hugged me tight around the neck and whispered, "This is the best day of my life." I was trying to blink back tears when someone pulled her from my arms. It was Knox, and he was settling Waylay on his shoulders as the rest of the players and parents gathered around to congratulate her. Knox shot me one of his rare, full-on grins that made me dizzy.
"Sloan and I have talked, and you're forgiven," Steph said, slinging his arm around me.
"As long as we're invited for ice cream," Sloan added.
"And included in your life," Steph insisted.
I pulled them both in for a hard hug, and over their shoulders, I saw Dad clap Knox on the back. 34. The Groom. Naomi. I threaded the stem of the earring through my lobe and leaned back to admire the effect. "What do you think?" I asked Waylay, who was sprawled across my bed on her stomach, chin pillowed in her hands. She studied the earrings. "Better," she decided. "They sparkle like honky-tonk on your shirt and they stand out more when you toss your hair." "I don't toss my hair," I said, ruffling hers. My niece was more and more willing to tolerate affection from me these days. "Oh, yes, you do. Whenever you catch Knox looking at you, you're all..." She paused to shake out her blonde hair and bat her eyes. "I do not. Do so. I'm the adult, and I'm in charge, and I say I don't," I insisted, flopping down on the bed next to her. "You also get this mushy face whenever he walks into a room or you get a text from him." "Oh, is it like the mushy face you make whenever someone says Mr. Michael's name?" I teased. Waylay's face transformed into what could aptly be described as mushy. "Ha, see, that is a mushy face," I said, pointing accusingly at her. "You wish," she scoffed, still smiling. "Can I use some of your hairspray since you messed up my hair?" "Sure," I said. She slipped off the bed and picked up the can I left on the dresser. "Are you sure you packed everything you need?" I asked, eyeing the pink duffel bag in the doorway. Waylay was invited to Nina's birthday sleepover. It was the first time she'd be spending the night with a non-family member, and I was feeling the nerves. "I'm sure," she said. Her tongue poked out between her teeth as she carefully brushed her hair over her forehead just so before hitting it with a shot of spray. "I'm working the closing shift tonight, so if you decide you don't want to spend the night, you can just call Grandma and Grandpa or Liza or Knox, and one of them will come pick you up." She crossed her eyes at me in the mirror. "Why wouldn't I want to spend the night? It's a sleepover." She was already dressed in pajamas, a request on the invitation. But she was wearing the pink sneakers Knox had given her with the ever-present heart charm. "I just want you to know that no matter what, you can always call and someone will be there," I said, "even when you're older." I cleared my throat and Waylay put down the hairspray. "What?" she asked, turning around to face me. "What?" I hedged.
You always clear your throat before you say something you think someone isn't going to like.
Damn astute kid.
Have you heard from your mom?
She looked down at her feet.
No. Why?
Someone said she was in town not too long ago, I said.
She was?
Waylay frowned like the news was disturbing. I nodded. I didn't talk to her.
Does this mean she's going to take me back? She asked.
I started to clear my throat, then stopped. I didn't know how to answer that.
Is that something you'd like?
I asked instead. Waylay was staring hard at her shoes now.
I'm okay here with you, she said finally.
I felt the tension release from my shoulders.
I like having you with me. You do?
I do. Even if your hair-tossing impression of me is terrible. She grinned, then stopped.
She always comes back.
It sounded different when she said it this time. It sounded more like a warning.
We'll figure that out when we have to, I told her.
Let's get you to your sleepover. Are you sure you packed your toothbrush?
Geez, Aunt Naomi, this isn't my first sleepover.
Okay, okay. What about underwear? Me.
How's Paris?
Steph. I drank too much champagne and danced with a man named Gaston, so pretty fucking great, but I still miss you and the fam.
Me. We miss you too.
Steph. Any drama happening that you forgot to tell me about?
Me.
It's so nice that you don't hold a grudge. And no drama to report except Waylay is going to a sleepover.
Steph.
Does that mean you'll be having your own sleepover? If so, wear the teddy I sent you. It'll melt Knox's mind. Oops, gotta go. Gaston is beckoning. Honky tonk on a Friday night was a rowdy time. The crowds were big, the music loud, and no one cared if they were hungover in the morning, so the drink orders were plentiful. I swept my hair up off the back of my neck as I waited for Max to finish keying in an order.
Where's Knox tonight?
Silver called from behind the bar.
Out with Lucian,
I yelled back over Sweet Home Alabama. The band was decent, but they were drowned out by the crowd singing over them.
He said he'd come by later.
Max moved away from the POS and started throwing drinks on trays.
Tips are good tonight, she said.
Sounds like it could be a shots night, I said with an eyebrow wiggle.
There's a new guy in your section, Max said, pointing to the wall on the far side of the dance floor.
How's the sleepover going?
Way messaged me to tell me to stop messaging her, and Gail sent me a picture of the girls doing mani-pedis and face masks, I told her. She looks like she's having the time of her life. I dropped off two fresh beers at a table of equestrians and gave a quick hello to Hinkle McCord and Bud Nickleby on my way across the bar. I caught a glimpse of the new patron. He'd angled his chair against the wall, half in shadow, but I could still make out his red hair. The guy from the library. The one who had asked about tech support. I felt a nervous tickle at the back of my neck. Maybe he lived in Knockemout. Maybe I was overthinking it and he was just a regular person with a broken laptop who liked a cold beer on a Friday night. And maybe he wasn't.
Here you go, guys, I said, doling out drinks to a four-top that had turned into a six-top.
Thanks, Naomi, and thank you for hooking my aunt up with that home health organization, said Niecy, the gossipy waitress from Dino's.
My pleasure. Hey, does anyone know that guy along the back wall? I asked.
Four heads swiveled in unison.
Knockemout wasn't much for subtlety.
Can't say he looks familiar, Niecy said.
That red hair sure stands out.
I feel like I'd remember him if I met him.
Is he giving you trouble, Nay?
Wraith demanded, looking deadly serious. I forced a laugh.
No, I just recognized him from the library. I didn't know if he was a local.
I suddenly wished Knox was here.
2 seconds later, I was really glad he wasn't, because this time when the front door opened, I prayed for the floor to open up and swallow me.
"Now, who the hell is that dandy?"
Wraith wondered out loud. "Oh, no. No, 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 no," I whispered. Warner Dennison III was scanning the bar, an expression of derision on his handsome face. I thought about turning around and hightailing it for the kitchen, but it was too late. He locked eyes with me, not bothering to hide his surprise. "Naomi," he called just as the band cut off their song. Heads turned to look at me and then back at Warner. I stayed rooted to the spot, but he was on the move, weaving his way through tables to get to me. "What are you doing here?" I demanded.
"Me? What the hell are you doing in a place like this? And what are you wearing?"
he said, reaching for me. His hands gripped my biceps like he was going to pull me in for an embrace, but I resisted. "I work here," I said, planting a hand firmly on his chest. A motorcycle revved its engine outside, and he flinched.
"Not anymore," Warner said. "This is ridiculous. You made your point. You're coming home."
"Home?" I managed a dry laugh. "Warner, I sold my house. I live here now."
"Don't be ridiculous," he said. "You're coming home with me."
Not wanting to cause a scene, I gave up trying to extricate myself from his grasp. "What are you talking about? We're not together anymore."
"You ran out on our wedding, then ignored my calls and emails for weeks. You wanted to make a point, and you made it."
"What point exactly do you think I was making?" His nostrils flared, and I noticed the clench of his jaw. He was getting upset, and it turned my stomach.
"You wanted me to see what life would be like without you. I get it."
We had the rapt attention of the bar. "Warner, let's talk somewhere else," I suggested. I pulled him past the bar and into the hallway by the restrooms.
"I miss you, Naomi. I miss our dinners together. I miss coming home and finding out you did all my laundry for me. I miss taking you out and showing you off."
I shook my head, hoping to rattle some sense into my brain. I couldn't believe he was here.
"Look," he said, "I apologize for what happened. I was stressed. I had too much to drink. It won't happen again."
"How did you find me?" I asked, finally extricating myself from his grasp.
"My mom is Facebook friends with yours. She saw some of the pictures your mom has been posting."
For once, I regretted not telling my mom exactly why I'd run out on my wedding. If she'd known why I left Warner, she sure as hell wouldn't have pointed the way here. Warner took my wrists in his hands.
"Everything all right here?"
Max asked, appearing at the mouth of the hall. "Everything's fine," I lied.
"Mind your own damn business," Warner muttered without taking his eyes off me.
"Warner!" I remembered all the little insults he'd say under his breath directed at me and countless others.
"Let's go somewhere where we can talk," he said, squeezing my wrists together.
"No! You need to listen to me. I'm not going anywhere with you, and I'm certainly not getting back together with you. It's over. We're over. There's nothing more to talk about. Now go home, Warner."
He stepped forward into my space. "I'm not going anywhere unless you're with me," he insisted.
I could smell alcohol on his breath and winced. "How much have you had to drink?"
"For fuck's sake, Naomi, stop trying to blame everything on a drink or two. Now I let you have your space, and look what you did with it."
He swept an arm out.
"This isn't you. You don't belong in a place like this with people like them."
"Let go of me, Warner," I said calmly. Instead of letting me go, he pushed me back against the wall and held me there by my biceps. I didn't like it. It wasn't like when Knox boxed me in and my senses were full of him when I wanted to do anything to be closer to him. This was different.
"You need to go, Warner," I said. "You want me to go, you're going with me."
I shook my head.
I can't leave. I'm working.
Fuck this place, Naomi. Fuck your little temper tantrum. I'm willing to forgive you.
Take your fucking hands off her. Now.
My knees went weak at Knox's voice.
Move along, asshole. This is between me and my fiancé,
Warner said.
Not the brightest answer,
Lucian said mildly. Knox and Lucian were standing at the mouth of the hallway. Lucian had his hand on Knox's shoulder. I couldn't tell if he was restraining him or telling him he had his back. Then suddenly Knox wasn't standing at the mouth of the hall, and Warner didn't have his hands on me anymore.
Give him the first shot,
Lucian called. Warner swung, and I watched in horror as he landed a punch that snapped Knox's head back.
Good enough,
Lucian said, his hands in the pockets of his slacks, the picture of relaxation. Knox let his fists do the talking. The first punch connected with Warner's nose, and I heard the crunch. Blindly, Warner struck out. The blow glanced off Knox's shoulder. As blood poured from Warner's nose, Knox threw another punch and then another before Warner crumpled to the floor. Before Knox could follow him down, Lucian was pulling him back.
Enough,
he said calmly as Knox fought to free himself.
Take care of Naomi.
When Lucian said my name, Knox's gaze abandoned my bloodied ex-fiancé and found me.
What the fuck?
Warner snarled as Lucian hauled him to his feet.
I'm calling my lawyer. Your ass will be in jail by morning.
Good luck with that. His brother's the chief of police, and my lawyer is 10 times more expensive than yours. Watch the door,
Lucian warned. And then he used Warner's face to open the kitchen door. A cheer went up in the bar as the two men disappeared. And then, I wasn't thinking about who was going to clean up the bloody smear on the glass, because Knox was in front of me, looking 1,000 shades of pissed off.
35. The whole story and a happy ending. Knox. I have to go to the restroom, Naomi announced and bolted into the ladies' room. God damn it, I muttered, clenching my hands into fists. Adrenaline and rage raced through my veins, heating my blood to boiling. I debated going into the no man's land after her, but Max, Silver, and Fee beat me to it. You can't all leave the floor at the same fucking time, I called through the door. Fuck off, Noxie. We got this, Fee yelled back.
And we got this, Nox, Wraith said, throwing a bar towel over his shoulder and stepping behind the bar. You're all getting beers or shots because I don't know how the fuck to pour anything else.
A raucous cheer rose up from the customers. The kitchen door swung open and Milford the cook walked out with 2 baskets of brisket nachos in one hand and an ice pack wrapped in a towel in the other. He tossed me the ice, then let out an ear-splitting whistle. Sloan jumped up and grabbed the baskets.
Yo, who got the brisket nachos?
Hands went up all over the bar.
If I find any of you are lying, I'll personally ruin your life for an entire year.
Sloan was no mild-mannered librarian. She had a legendary temper that, when roused, was a Category 5 shitstorm. All but 2 hands wisely went down.
That's better, she said.
We got this, boss. See to your lady,
Milford insisted.
Did Lucian, Mr. Rollins is taking out the trash,
he said with a grin before ducking back into the kitchen. I wanted to, but I was afraid her posse wouldn't let me near her. I could punch an asshole out without a second thought, but I was smart enough to be a little terrified of the honky-tonk women.
Naomi, I said, pounding a fist on the bathroom door. If you don't get your ass out here, I'm either coming in there or I'm going to go knock more sense into that son of a bitch.
The door opened, and Naomi, with smudged eye makeup, glared at me. "You will do no such thing." Relief coursed through me, and I leaned into her. "I'm going to touch you now because I need to. And I'm warning you in advance because if I touch you and you flinch, I'm going to go out in the parking lot and start kicking ass until he's too broken to ever touch another woman again." Her eyes widened, but she nodded. I tried to be gentle as I took her by the hand. "We good?" I asked. She nodded again. It was good enough for me. I pulled her past the restrooms and Fee's office into the next hallway that led to my office. "I can't believe this happened," she groaned. "I'm so embarrassed." She hadn't been embarrassed. She'd been fucking terrified. The look in her eyes when I stepped into the hall was one I'd never forget as long as I lived. "The nerve of him showing up here, saying he wants me back because he misses how I cleaned up after him." I squeezed her hand. "Pay attention, Daisy." "To what? The way you turned his face into ground beef? Do you think you broke his nose?" I knew I had. That was the point. "Pay attention to this," I said, pointing at the keypad next to the door. 0522. She stared at the keypad, then back at me. "Why are you giving me the code?" "If that guy or anyone else you don't want to see shows up, you come back here and you plug in 0522. "I'm trying to have a nervous breakdown and you want me to memorize numbers." "Enter the code, Naomi." She did as she was told while muttering about what pains in the ass all men were. She wasn't wrong. "Good girl. See the green light?" She nodded. "Open the door." "Knox, I should get back out there. People are going to be talking. I've got 6 tables," she said, her hand hovering over the handle. "You should open the damn door and take a breath." Those gorgeous fucking hazel eyes of hers widened, and I felt the world slow to a stop. When she did that, when she looked at me with hope, trust, and just a little bit of lust, it did things to me. Things I didn't want to dissect because it felt good, and I didn't want to waste time wondering how it was going to go bad. "Okay," she said finally, pushing the door open. I hustled her across the threshold and closed the door behind us. "Wow, the Fortress of Solitude," she said with reverence. "It's my office," I said dryly. "It's your safe space, your lair. No one but Waylon is allowed in here, and you just gave me the code." "Don't make me regret it," I said, moving in to back her against the door, fighting against the need to grab her and hold her tight. "I'll try not to," she promised on a breathy sigh. "What happened out there was a shit show," I began, putting my hands on either side of her head. She winced. "I know. I'm so sorry. I had no idea he was coming. I haven't talked to him since the rehearsal dinner. I tried to get him away from the crowd and handle it privately, but baby, a man ever gets you in that position again, I want you to knee him in the balls as hard as you can, and when he doubles over, you knee him in the fucking face. Then you run like hell. I don't give a shit about causing scenes. I give a shit that I walked into my bar and found a man with his hands on my girl." Her lower lip trembled, and I wanted to hunt down Warner, whatever the fuck his name was, and put his head through a plate glass window. "I'm sorry," she whispered. "Baby, I don't want you to be sorry. I don't want you to be scared. I want you to be as pissed off as I am that some asshole thought he could put his hands on you. I want you to know your worth, so no one in their right mind ever thinks they can treat you like that. You get me?" She nodded tentatively. "Good. Think it's time you tell me the whole story, Daze." "We don't really need to talk. You're not getting out of this room until you tell me everything, and I mean every fucking thing." "But we're not really together." I pinched her lips closed. "Uh-uh, Naomi. It doesn't matter what the fucking label says. I care about you, and if you don't start talking, I can't do what I need to do to make sure it never happens again." She was still for a long beat. "If I tell you, will you let me go back to work?" she asked through my fingers.
yes, I'll let you go back to work. If I tell you, will you promise not to hunt Warner down? I was not going to like this one bit, and I knew it. Yes, I lied. Fine. I took my hand away, and she ducked under my arm to stand in the middle of the room between my desk and the couch. It's my fault, she began. Bullshit. She whirled around and fixed me with a look. I'm not telling you anything if you're going to interject like one of those old man Muppets in the balcony. We'll both just die of starvation in here, and eventually someone will smell our decaying bodies and break down the door. I leaned against the front of my desk and stretched my legs out. Fine. Continue with your asinine assessment. Excellent alliteration, she said. Talk, Days. She blew out a breath. Fine, okay. We were together for a while. History, you've got it. You moved on, and he hasn't. She nodded. We'd been together long enough that I had my eye on the next step. She glanced at me. I don't know if you know this about me, but I really like checking things off my list. No shit. Anyway, on paper, we were compatible. It made sense. We made sense. And it wasn't like he was making plans for next year's vacations, but he wasn't moving as quickly as I thought he should. You told him to shit or get off the pot, I guessed. Much more eloquently, of course. I told him I saw a future for us. I was working for his family's company. We'd been dating for 3 years. It just made sense. I told him if he didn't want to be with me, he needed to cut me loose. When he slid a jeweler's box over the table at his favorite Italian place a few weeks later, part of me was so relieved. The other part? I think I knew it was a mistake right there. I shook my head and crossed my arms. Baby, you knew it was a mistake long before then. Well, you know what they say about hindsight. It makes you feel like an idiot. Her lips quirked. Something like that. You don't really want to hear all this. Finish it, I growled. I spilled my guts to you the night Nash was shot. This'll even us out. She sighed, and I knew I'd won. So we started planning the wedding. And by we, I mean his mother and me, because he was busy with work and didn't want to deal with the details. Things were happening with the company. He was under a lot of stress. He started drinking more, snapping at me for little things. I tried to be better, do more, expect less. My hands itched to close around that fuckface's throat. About a month before the wedding, we were out to dinner with another couple, and he had too much to drink. I was driving us home, and he accused me of flirting with the other guy. I laughed. It was so absurd. He didn't think it was funny. She paused and winced. Say it, I said gruffly. He grabbed me by the hair and yanked my head back. I was so surprised I swerved and almost hit a parked car. It took everything I had not to jump up from the desk and run into the parking lot to kick this fucking guy's ass. He said he didn't mean it, she continued, as if her words hadn't just set off a ticking time bomb inside me. He apologized profusely. He sent me flowers every day for a week. It was the stress, he'd said. He was trying for a promotion to set us up for our future. I was choking on suppressed rage and wasn't sure how long I could pretend to be calm. We were so close to the wedding day, and he really did seem like he was sorry. I was stupid enough, eager enough, to move on to the next step that I'd believed him. Things were fine, better than fine, until the night of the rehearsal. My fingers dug into my biceps. She was pacing now in front of me. He showed up to the rehearsal smelling like a distillery, and he had several more drinks during dinner. I overheard his mother making snide comments about how she wished she could have invited more people, but that she couldn't because my parents couldn't afford it. Fuckface's mom sounded like she needed her own kind of ass-kicking. I was so mad I confronted him when we left the restaurant. She shuddered, and I was afraid I was going to grind my fillings into dust. Thank God we were alone in the parking lot. My parents had already gone home. Steph and the rest of the wedding party were still inside.
He was so angry. Just like a switch had flipped. I never saw it coming.
She closed her eyes, and I knew she was reliving the moment all over again.
He slapped me right across the face, hard. Not hard enough to knock me down, but just enough to humiliate me. I just stood there in shock, holding my cheek. I couldn't believe he'd do something like that.
I doubted that Naomi was aware she'd lifted a hand to her cheek as if she could still feel the hit. I couldn't hold it in anymore. I turned for the door and was ready to rip the knob off when I felt her hands on my back.
Knox, where are you going?
I flipped the lock and wrenched the door open. To dig a shallow grave so I have a place to put him after I get tired of throwing punches. Her fingernails dug into my skin under my shirt, giving me something else to feel besides fury.
Don't leave me alone,
she said, then pressed herself against my back.
Fuck. He started pacing and yelling. It was my fault, he told me. He wasn't ready to get married. He had goals he wanted to accomplish before focusing on his personal life. It was my fault for pushing him. All he was trying to do was give me everything I wanted, and there I was complaining to him the night before the wedding he didn't want to have.
That's fucking bullshit, Naomi, and you know it.
Yeah,
she squeaked, resting her forehead between my shoulder blades. I felt something damp leak through the shirt. Damn it. I turned and took her in my arms, holding her face against my chest. Her breath hitched.
Baby, you're killing me. I'm so embarrassed, she whispered. It was a slap. He didn't put me in the hospital. Didn't threaten my life.
Doesn't make it anywhere near right. A man doesn't put hands on a woman like that. Ever.
But I wasn't exactly innocent. I tried to force a man to marry me. I almost said I do even after he hit me. How pathetic is that? I was in that church basement, in my dress, worrying about what other people would think if I didn't go through with it. Worried about letting them down.
I thumbed away the tears that tracked down her cheeks. Each one felt like a knife to my heart.
I still don't know if I would have made the right choice if Tina hadn't called me and said she was in trouble. That's when I knew I wasn't going to go through with it.
After everything Tina had done, at least she'd provided the excuse Naomi needed when she needed it. Daisy, you gave him a choice. It doesn't matter how shitty the options are. It's still his choice to make. He could spend the rest of his life with you or without you. He didn't give you a choice when he hurt you.
But I should have listened to what he was trying to tell me. He didn't want to commit, and I forced him to.
He had a choice, I repeated. Look, a man doesn't go all in with a woman. It's for a reason. Maybe he's looking for something better. Maybe he's just comfortable with his place in your world and doesn't want to make a place for you in his. Either way, he makes no forward progress unless he's forced into it. After that, even if he pops the question, even if he shows up at the altar, he'll hold on to the fact that it wasn't his idea. He washes his hands of responsibility for the entire relationship. But the bottom fucking line is, he had a choice every step of the way. You didn't force him into anything. She looked down.
He never thought I was good enough for him.
Baby, truth is, on his best day, he was never going to be good enough for you, and he fucking knew it. So he'd manipulated her, and he'd tried to prove he was better by showing he was stronger, more powerful, by using force. And it only would have gotten worse.
Damn it, Knox. You cannot be sweet to me right now.
Do not cry. Do not shed one more tear over some asshole who never deserved you in the first place. Or I'm going to go break both his arms and legs. She cast her eyes down, then looked back up at me.
Thank you.
For what?
For being here. For taking care of me and cleaning up my mess. It really means a lot.
I thumbed away another stray tear. What did I say about crying?
That one was for you, not him.
Instead of hunting Warner down and kicking him in the gut until my boot wore through, I did something more important. I lowered my mouth to take hers. She instantly went soft and pliable against me, surrendering. I spun us around so she had her back to the door.
Knox,
she whispered. Then I pressed my knee between her thighs and pinned her against the door with my hips as I plundered her mouth. She melted against me, eager and needy. I was instantly hard. The sexy little moan she made in the back of her throat when I ground my erection against her made me lose my fucking mind. I licked and kissed and tasted her until the air around us was electrified, until the pulse in my blood matched the beat of her heart. I pumped my cock against her once, twice, three times, before shoving my hand between our bodies and under that skirt that I loved to hate. When I found the silk edge of her underwear, I growled. I knew just by the touch it was one of the pairs I'd bought her, and I loved knowing she wore something I gave her close to her skin in a place I'd be the only one to see. He doesn't deserve 1 second of your energy. Never did, I said, yanking the underwear to the side with more haste than finesse.
What are you doing?
She asked, her eyes glazed with desire. Reminding you what you deserve. I thrust 2 fingers into her wet heat and swallowed her cry with my mouth. She was already rippling around me, begging to come. Do you want me to stop? My voice was harsher than I intended, but I couldn't be soft, gentle, when she was making me harder than concrete.
If you stop, I'll murder you,
she groaned. That's my girl, I said, nipping at the sensitive skin of her neck. I fucked her with my fingers, starting slow and building speed. I held her gaze with an obsessive desire to watch the orgasm I gave her ruin her. But I needed something more. I needed to taste her. She whimpered when I dropped to my knees. The whimper became a low moan when I pressed my mouth between her legs. Ride my hand, Naomi. Ride it while I make you come. Remember who you are, what you deserve. It was the last order I gave because my tongue was busy teasing circles over her sensitive clit. She tasted like heaven as she bucked against my face. My dick throbbed behind my zipper with a need so intense I didn't recognize it. Mine. I wanted to claim her, to make her mine so assholes knew they didn't have a chance.
Knox,
she whimpered, and I felt the clutch and pull of her around my fingers. It was fucking beautiful. That's right, baby, I murmured. Feel me in you. I sucked gently while working the swollen bud with my tongue. She let out a wrenching moan, and I felt her come apart around my fingers. She was a miracle, a work of art, and no one deserved her, not Warner, not even me. But not deserving something wasn't going to stop me from taking. The waves broke, the clenching became a languid flutter, and still my cock ached. I wanted to thrust into her and feel the echoes of her orgasm on my shaft. Then she was pulling me to my feet, and her fingers were at my belt. My palms went to the door as she reverently released my erection, and she sank to her knees. You don't have to do this, Naomi. My whisper was harsh with need.
I want to.
Her lips were parted. I felt her hot breath on my thigh, and my cock jerked. She made an approving noise, and before I could say or do anything, those perfect pink lips were parting, and my tip disappeared between them. It was like a lightning strike. My last coherent thought was that the only thing that saved Warner Fuckface from the beating of his life was Naomi's perfect mouth on my cock.
36. The Break-In.
Knox. Nash yawned and scraped a hand over his face. He was sitting at his dining table in sweatpants. His usually clean-shaven mug had the beginnings of a beard.
Look, I told you, I don't remember jack shit from the shooting. I don't even remember pulling the car over.
It was after 2 a.m., and Lucian had insisted we put our heads together on the situations. I flipped my phone over to see if Naomi had texted me yet. She was supposed to text as soon as she got home. After the night she'd had, I felt unsettled letting her drive home by herself. But Lucian was insistent that we needed to talk to Nash. Is that normal? Not remembering? I asked. Nash shrugged with his good shoulder.
How the fuck should I know? This is the first time I got shot.
He was being flippant, but there were shadows under his eyes that had nothing to do with the time of night. Lucian, on the other hand, looked as if he was just hitting his stride. He was in what was left of another expensive suit. His tie and jacket hung over the back of Nash's couch. Even as a kid, he'd slept short and light. Every sleepover we'd ever had, he'd been the last to fall asleep and the first to wake. We never talked about what demons kept him up at night. We didn't have to.
We need the dash cam footage, Lucian said.
He leaned forward, elbows on knees, a glass of bourbon in his hand. My brother was already shaking his head.
Fuck you, Luce. You know I can't do that. It's evidence in an ongoing investigation. I know law and order don't mean much to you two.
We've got the same goal. Finding out who the fuck decided to put two bullets in you and leave you for dead, I interjected. If I were you, I wouldn't be pissed off about the extra eyes and ears. I flipped my phone over again. No messages.
What's your problem?
Nash asked, nodding at my phone.
Liza J kicking your ass in words with friends again?
Naomi isn't home yet.
It's a 5-minute drive, Nash pointed out.
Lucian looked at me.
You didn't tell him? Tell me what?
Naomi's ex showed up at Honky Tonk tonight. Put his hands on her. Scared her.
Jesus, where did you put the body?
Lucian smiled slyly.
You don't want to know.
Nash pinched the bridge of his nose.
I really don't want this paperwork.
Relax, I said. He's not dead. But if he ever shows his goddamn face in this town again, I make no promises.
Knox gave him the first shot in front of witnesses, Lucian explained. What else did he do in front of witnesses? Break his fucking neck?
Just the idiot's nose. I escorted him out into the parking lot and helped him understand if he ever came within 100 miles of Naomi again, my lawyer was going to make it his personal mission to bankrupt him, his family, and his family's business. Luce also smashed his face against the kitchen door, I added cheerfully, wanting to give credit where credit was due. My brother picked up the untouched bourbon Lucian had put in front of him and downed it.
God damn it. I hate being left out of shit.
You didn't miss much, I told him.
What the hell are you doing here?
Nash demanded, looking at me. I'm staring at you two, pains in my ass.
What the hell are you doing here staring at us when you should be home with her? She's probably messed up over the whole thing. Scared, embarrassed, worried about how it's going to look in a guardianship hearing. This, on top of the Tina shit, is the last thing she needs.
I didn't like how well my brother knew Naomi. She's fine. We talked it out. I'm heading to her place as soon as you get your head out of your ass and hand over the dash cam footage.
What Tina shit? Lucian asked.
Nash was filling him in on the details of Tina's break-ins when my phone rang. I all but vaulted out of my seat to answer it.
About damn time, Daisy.
Knox?
The way she said my name had my hackles rising. What's wrong? I said, already grabbing my car keys. Nash and Lucian were on their feet, too.
Someone was here. Someone broke in. It's a mess. It's going to take me forever to clean this up.
Get out of the house, I snarled.
Lucian was shrugging into his jacket, and Nash was doing his best to pull a shirt on over his sweats. I tossed him his sneakers.
They're not here. I checked,
Naomi said in my ear. We're going to have words about that, I assured her grimly. Now get back in your fucking car, lock the fucking doors, and drive to Liza's. Do not get out of your fucking car until your dad comes out to get you.
Knox, it's the middle of the night.
I don't give a shit if it's the middle of his colonoscopy. Get in the car now. I'm hanging up and I want you to call Nash. Stay on the line with him while I call your dad.
Knox,
don't argue with me, Naomi. Get in the damn car. I heard her grumbling under her breath and then the telltale signs of an ignition starting. Good girl, call Nash. I hung up before she could say anything else and scrolled through my contacts to Lou's number.
Cottage?
Nash asked. His phone lit up. Naomi's name was on it.
Yeah.
I'll drive Nash, Lucian said, snatching the keys off the hook by the door.
You can't drive a department vehicle, Luce, Nash argued.
Watch me. Yeah, Lou, I said when Naomi's dad answered. We got a problem. We came in hot, looking like a high-speed car chase with me in the lead, followed by Lucian and Nash, lights blazing in a knock-em-out PD SUV. My hands tightened on the wheel when I saw everyone, dogs included, out on Liza's porch. What part of stay the fuck inside didn't they understand? I slammed on my brakes in front of Naomi's cottage. Lucian slid in next to me. I turned to him. Do me a favor and get everyone inside so they're not standing around waiting for someone to start picking them off. Wordlessly, Lucian nodded and melted into the night.
Backup's on the way, Nash said as we jogged up the porch steps.
The screen door was hanging by one hinge, the door beyond it wide open. Naomi said no one's inside.
And she knows that how?
Nash said, sounding almost as pissed as I felt. Because before she called me, she walked through the house holding a bread knife.
And you're going to have words with her about that, right?
What do you think?
I think you're going to have words.
I had to admit, it was kind of nice to have my brother back.
Fuck,
I said when we entered. Mess was an understatement. Couch cushions were thrown on the floor. The desk drawers had all been pulled out, their contents dumped. The coat closet was open, its inventory scattered throughout the living room. The kitchen cabinets and drawers had all been gutted. The refrigerator door hung open with half of the food dumped on the linoleum.
Someone was pissed off and in a hurry, Nash observed.
I started up the steps, trying to keep a lid on my rage. Twice in one night she'd been violated, and I'd been a step behind each time. I felt helpless. Useless. What good was I if I couldn't keep her safe? I heard my brother on the stairs behind me, his ascent slower than my own. Spotting Waylay's pink comforter in the hallway, I headed into her room. It had fared worse than the first floor. Her new clothes had been ripped from the closet and dresser. The bedding was torn off, the mattress flipped and leaning against the wall. The picture frames that had hung on the walls most of my life were on the floor. Some of them broken.
The ex or the sister?
Nash wondered out loud. Naomi's bedroom had been hastily tossed. The bed stripped, the closet open and emptied. The same with the dresser. There was a mess of cosmetics on top of the dresser that I doubted Naomi had made. Bitch was scrawled across the mirror in lipstick. I was seeing red that had nothing to do with the shade of lipstick.
Keep you cool,
Nash advised.
You snapping and going off the rails on a temper tantrum isn't going to help.
We poked into every nook and cranny upstairs, making sure the place was empty. By the time we hit the first floor again, Nash was pale and sweaty, and two more cruisers had pulled in. The surrounding woods were painted blue and red from the emergency lights. I went out on the front porch to force fresh air into my lungs so I could choke down the rising anger. I spotted her, standing in the dirt lane, still dressed in her work uniform with one of my grandfather's old flannel shirts, layered on top. Waylon was leaning against her shins, as protective as a basset hound got. I wasn't even conscious of jogging down the porch steps. I just knew I was being pulled to her.
"Are you okay?"
she asked, looking worried. I shook my head and wrapped my arms around her. She was asking me if I was okay. "I'm fine," I lied.
37. Shave and a haircut. Naomi. "Where are we going?" I asked Knox as we left Knockemout in the rearview mirror. "Are we going shopping?" Waylay asked hopefully from the back seat. She'd taken the news that we were temporarily moving into Liza J's well. Of course, I'd flat out lied to her, telling her there was a bug problem at the cottage and that we'd be staying with everyone at Liza's for a few days. Waylay was thrilled for the extended sleepover. My parents, on the other hand, were struggling. Not with having us all under one roof, that part had them in near ecstasy. But Knox had insisted I spill the truth, the whole truth, beginning with why I'd run out on Warner. While my mother wrote a strongly worded message to Warner's mother on Facebook at 4 a.m., Knox had to physically restrain my father from leaving to go after Warner. Dad calmed down considerably after Lucian assured him that Knox had not only mopped the floor with Warner, he'd also broken the man's nose. The truth hurt, as I'd expected it to, which was why I hadn't shared it in the first place. But my parents had stood up under its weight. Over Mom's anxiety pancakes, we'd talked until nearly 5 a.m. before I'd fallen into bed with Knox in his childhood bedroom. I was certain I'd never be able to sleep, but with his heavy arm anchoring me to his side, I'd fallen into a dreamless oblivion and stayed there until 10. When I woke up, I was alone because Knox had driven into town to pick up Waylay from her sleepover. I'd taken my gigantic vat of coffee on the front porch and waited for them, thinking about how the man just kept blurring the lines of our agreement. And when they returned, when Knox put his hand on top of Waylay's blonde head, ruffled her hair, and gave her an affectionate shove, I realized just how blurry those lines in my heart were getting. I was in trouble. And it had nothing to do with a break-in or a criminal sister or an ex-fiancé. I was falling for the man I'd sworn I wouldn't. But Knox made it impossible not to. He made it inevitable. Unfortunately, at that moment, the caseworker had shown up ready to do the home study that I'd completely forgotten about. I was not imagining the look of surprise on Mrs. Suarez's face when I tried to herd Waylay into Liza's house while issuing a vague excuse as to why we were unprepared for her visit. Thankfully, Knox had stepped in once again, ordering Waylay into the kitchen to get us coffees for the road. When she was out of earshot, he was the one who explained the situation to Mrs. Suarez. I did not have a good feeling about what this meant for the custody hearing.
"We're not going shopping,"
Knox told Waylay as he took the on-ramp for the highway. "What's all this stuff in the back for?" Waylay asked. Between freaking out over what our caseworker thought of me allowing multiple break-ins to happen, I was curious too. Before he'd closed the cover over the truck bed, we'd spotted more than a dozen shopping bags.
"Supplies,"
he said mysteriously. His phone rang and I saw Jeremiah's name on the screen.
"Yeah,"
Knox said by way of a greeting. The man was not one for small talk.
"We'll be there in about 45. He said into the phone. "Yeah, see you there."
There turned out to be Hannah's Place, a homeless shelter on the outskirts of Washington, D.C. It was a newer brick building on a large fenced lot. Knox pulled the truck through the gate and swung it around toward the entrance, where I saw Jeremiah standing under an awning.
"The second string has arrived,"
Jeremiah said with a grin as we piled out.
"Great do, Way."
Waylay proudly patted a hand to the little French braid she'd worked around her head like a crown. "Thanks."
The woman beside Jeremiah was short, stocky, and very, very brave because she charged right on up to Knox and wrapped him in a hard hug. "There's my second favorite barber," she said. Knox hugged her back.
"How did I lose the top spot this time?"
She leaned back and grinned wickedly. "Jer brought me 200 rolls of toilet paper."
"We'll see how you feel about me after you see what I brought," he said.
"I see you brought me 2 new volunteers," she said.
"Shirley, meet Naomi and Waylay,"
Knox said.
"Shirley left a 7-figure corporate gig to run this shelter."
"Who needs boardrooms and corner offices when you can spend your days doing good?" Shirley said, shaking my hand and then Waylay's. "It's so nice to meet you," I said.
"Likewise, especially if you've got 2 working hands and don't mind stocking shelves and packing boxes."
"Ready and able," I said, elbowing Waylay, who was looking a little morose.
"Put them where you want them,"
Knox said.
"I'll set up shop and we can get started."
Waylay and I followed Shirley as she led the way inside.
"I'd rather be shopping," Waylay whispered to me.
"Maybe we can find a mall afterwards," I said, giving her shoulders a squeeze. One thing was for sure, Knox Morgan was full of surprises.
"I guess it's kind of cool they do this," Waylay said as we watched Knox and Jeremiah run their makeshift outdoor salon through the tall windows.
While we had spent 2 hours sorting food and clothing donations with other volunteers, Knox and Jeremiah had entertained an endless stream of shelter residents in their chairs under the awning on the sidewalk. It was a beautiful day edging toward fall, and the mood was festive. The staff, volunteers, and residents had formed a kind of large, unruly family, making something as bleak as homelessness feel like a